Welcome to Everybody Gay. No, really, Everybody Gay.
Tonight, a queer exploration of the wonderful new book, I Kissed Shara Wheeler.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I'm so glad I read this book.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina. I think I can say a proud member of the Church of Casey McQuinston. Wow.
agreed. Oh my goodness. So the reason that we have decided to discuss this book tonight is actually our first like book-based podcast, I think, that we have ever done, is really because this book has so many qualities of so many other media that we've already covered. It has kind of the mystery of PLL, you know, in the early seasons, queerness. People are maneuvering through the school, through the air vents. There are flashbacks. There's a lot of obsession. It has like the teenage bounty hunter's queerness and Christianity mixed in. And also like a little bit of, I think, that Saved vibe from, you know, the Mandy Moore, Jenna Malone era. And then it also kind of has some Cruel Summer queerness and teenagers feeling like teenagers to it.
Yeah. This book is kind of feels like it was written just for us. I think we can say that it was. Just first of all, if you have not read this book, pause this podcast, go read it, listen to it.
Like, fix your life.
Yeah. Just find a way to get your hands on it. This podcast will still be here for you. If you can't get it from your library for another 6 months, that's okay. Can press pause. We've got a lot of other episodes you can listen to. I cannot stress enough the joy of experiencing this book just through experiencing it for yourself, through reading it. So please, I implore you, do not listen to this episode if you have not read this book. That being said, I know that there are probably a couple people out there who will not heed my warning. So should we just like very briefly summarize what this book is?
Yes. Okay, so this book, think of Shara Wheeler as basically like Allison / Mona / A as a life coach. She's the it girl of this tiny town in Alabama. All of the characters attend this very kind of conservative private Christian school. So do you have that? Do you have like Allison De Laurentiis attending basically the school that they go to in Teenage Bounty Hunters? So you're pretty much there now. We have Chloe, who is the protagonist. She is a transplant from California. She has two queer moms who had to come back to Alabama, where one of them is from, because her grandmother was in failing health. So they all find themselves, you know, sort of fish out of water to some extent in this town in Alabama. Chloe and Shara are rivals. They both want to be valedictorian. This is pretty much the way things have always been until one day Shara kisses Chloe and then disappears.
Bum, bum, bum.
I told you she was like Allison De Laurentiis. Boom, she is gone. Mystery. All of these like little notes are left behind that Chloe has to team up with two other people who have kissed Shara Wheeler. They are her ostensible boyfriend, the quarterback of the high school football team, who is named Smith, and the boy next door with a crush, whose name is Rory. Both of them are POC characters, which is really cool. The book has just kind of really, really good and really diverse representation throughout. Chloe, the protagonist, is bisexual. And so there's a lot of discussion of bisexual visibility. And so the book is basically about the story of them trying to track down and find Shara Wheeler during these last few weeks of their high school careers, and all of the mischief and mayhem that thus ensues.
Yes. Yeah. And what starts as, you know, Chloe kind of acting like she just has to figure out what Shara's deal is, and like her motivation, the motivation that she's telling herself as her motivation for a large part of the book, is just that she, it feels like she is the only person who doesn't think of Shara as this perfect, perfect little angel girl that the rest of their community sees her as. And she is determined to sort of expose her for, you know, who she sees Shara to actually be. Of course, as the story goes on, that becomes a little bit more complicated, especially when at a certain point, Chloe basically decides that Shara is in love with her. And in one of my favorite lines of the whole book, I'm paraphrasing here, but she's basically like, oh, she's in love with me. That's so embarrassing for her, which I think is so funny. And I also just think is like, it speaks to so many of the relationship dynamics that we have talked about and that we find really compelling. This is like, you know, I don't want to just say that this piece of media is like, is what it is in relation to other pieces of media, because it's absolutely stands on its own as a great work. But really, I mean, this is like if, you know, Spencer Mona or Spencer Allison, if like that was the love story that PLL was invested in telling. This is like if, you know, at like Mona got to like get the girl in the end. Like this is so many versions of like character dynamics that we love to talk about. And it's also, there's also another like element that's very PLL is all these little notes that are being left all around that certain people understand and certain people don't. And Shara is very Allison in that she'll hide something within a thing, within a thing, within a thing, which is very fun. And then of course, like as we go on, we learn that Shara's life is not exactly all that it is cracked up to be.
Yeah, it's a great story, a tale as old as time, enemies to friends to lovers, slow burn, mystery involved. What more could you want? I agree. When you were saying like it feels like it was written like we were the target audience. Listeners, if you are lovers of like the queerness of PLL, I think that this book is going to have a lot to offer you as well.
Yeah, I mean, it really feels like this is canonically queer Spencer. It feels like this is like for anybody who's just really been missing April Stevens, like who wanted a satisfying ending to her story. I was like badgering you with texts about it before you started reading it. And I, when they brought up the air ducts, there is a scene, listeners, there is a scene where characters crawl through the air ducts. And I practically started screaming because I was like, this can't be real. This book cannot be real. Somebody playing a joke on me, and this is not a real book that exists because it is simply too good.
So listeners, like Vita and I are, we're good friends. We text each other frequently. We consume obviously a lot of the same media. There is a dynamic in our friendship where if I suggest that Vina watch or read something, she's on it. Like her media consumption is such that like, but she like with Teenage Bounty Hunters, like I told you about it and you laughed me. You finished the series like before I did.
This is true.
But when Vina tells me to watch something, I'm always like, oh great, I'm gonna get it on my list. And I slack on it. And I don't always get to it right away. But you were so enthusiastic about this book. And I had also like seen things about this book and I was like, okay, I'm gonna give it a try. So I started reading it like only slightly behind when you started reading it. I think it was probably like your third or fourth text. I was like, okay, I'm downloading it right now. I'm gonna start reading it. And I really do think like you were waiting so hard for me to get to the air duct scene. Like I think it might be like it's like maybe chapter 10 or chapter 12 or something. Yeah. You were just like counting down the pages until I got there so that we could scream together about how PLL it was. And it was extremely, extremely PLL vibes for sure.
I appreciate you characterizing my badgering as enthusiasm, because I was like, what part are you at? What chapter are you on? What chapter are you on yet?
Yes. It was super, super, super fun. And also, I mean, I feel like that makes it like that's actually one of the things that makes it fun when we're consuming media together is that we're like going back and forth about what what's happening there.
But yeah, a super chill way to read a book.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So when you were talking about like one of your favorite parts being when Chloe decides that Shara is in love with her and she's like, oh my God, how embarrassing for her. One of my favorite moments is actually when towards the end of the book, like Shara kind of says to Chloe, like, oh, you know, you're the girl. Like, you're the girl who is like from, like, you're from LA, like, you've been like out in the world and you just seem like you fucking know everything and like you have experience of like all these big places that we've only ever dreamed about going and you don't care about anything here and you like flaunt breaking the dress code, like you're the, like, so whereas like Chloe's narrative has always been that like Shara is the it girl, like Shara, the it girl is like, no, actually, like, you're the girl, like you're the badass, you're the one that everybody has their eye on. And Chloe is like, she has this moment of feeling like, oh my God, when the it girl tells you you're the it girl, it's just like mind blowing. And I really like that moment for both of them quite a lot. Cause I feel like, you know, in the world of PLL and in the world of this book, like so much of the characters is their image, is like what they look like to the outside world. And I like kind of hearing about how that's externalized, I guess.
Oh, I completely agree. I loved that as well. And I love, like, I always love anytime a piece of media kind of turns, like, shows you the outsider perspective of a character who we have a really internal viewpoint on. It reminds me of like whenever we in the PLL world, whenever we have characters who are not the liars reacting to the liars and you're like, oh, right. Like to other people, these girls are really a mess. I loved that as well. And I really liked the arc of their relationship where there were so many things about this book, so many ways in which this book felt like such a gift. And one of them to me is that this book is so queer. Like it is so queer from the jump. And this is not a story where like there's one or two queer characters or there's, you know, maybe like the queer cup ship and then like the supporting queer ship and like then you have like a bunch of straight ships or anything. Like really our title is Everybody Gay, because like everybody is gay in this book. Like it is a super, super, super gay book. And one of the things, you know, we have talked about that quote around, you know, just or that idea of like, what do you need for more representation? You need more, right? More representation is how you get better representation. And even within the universe of this book, it means that there are so many different angles on queer relationships and queer dynamics, both in terms of the relationships themselves, but also the characters' relationships with their own queerness and their own identity. And one of the things that super fun in the Chloe Shara relationship is that there's this whole section of the book after Chloe has decided that Shara is in love with her where she's just fucking with her because she's like, well, Shara is obviously in love with me and so I'm just gonna like try to be as sexy as possible to her all the time. And it's so fun. And like it would be fun, Casey McQuiston is a good enough writer that like that dynamic would be fun no matter what, but part of what made it so fun is I was like, I don't think I've ever really read this kind of dynamic between two teen girls. And it's so fun. It's like, it's not fraught and angsty. There are elements of that. And this book takes the serious issues of its characters, you know, definitely to heart. But it's also just fun and flirty and silly. And again, like, reminds me of, you know, like the best parts of Sterling and April. Like, it's giving the characters the opportunity to be silly and flirty with each other and to have that queer joy.
Yeah, and to act like teenagers. Like, I think it's great. And like I keep saying, like, it feels like there's so much Allison in the character of Shara. Like seeing her be like beset by this like this, you know, new unexplored attraction to another girl is just so enjoyable. It's so great.
It's so fun. And like, what I really like is that Chloe and Shara are both very, very smart characters, and they think that they're sort of in this chess game. And then it's like, at a certain point, it starts to become real for both of them. And that feels very Spencer to me. It makes me really wish that we'd had like a season where Spencer was like trying to romance Mona or something. And then like, whoops, it turns out it's, you know, not fake. And that, you know, the whole idea of like obsession and competition as a mask is really, really compelling in a queer relationship. I had a question, which is, when do you feel like it becomes real for Shara?
Oh, that's such a good, that's such a good question. Okay, so I think that on some level, it has always been real. I think that like going through this elaborate like pantomime of the notes and everything, like that is her way of controlling it. That's kind of her way of like touching it, but not fully touching, you know?
Yeah.
So I think on some level it's always been real. But I think it probably becomes really real. So like Vina said, like don't listen to this episode if you don't want to be spoiled about this book, because I'm about to give a big spoiler, which is that I think it becomes real when Chloe finds Shara.
Yeah.
And Shara has basically, she's basically just been waiting around for someone to find her for these past weeks. Like, she's still in her party dress. She's just, you know, hanging out. She definitely knows that it's gonna, like, she definitely knows that, like, Chloe is the one who is the smartest of her, of her searchers, and that Chloe is definitely the most obsessed. I think it becomes real the moment Chloe steps foot on the boat, and I think it most for sure becomes real when Chloe kisses her again and then pushes her into the water.
Yes.
That's who they are. Like, Shara is not gonna, like, Shara is gonna maybe be crushed out on you, but she's not gonna respect you unless you also push her into the lake.
So. Yeah. And there's really this sense of like, they are each other's perfect match.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you said about it kind of being always there, because to me, it made me think a lot about the thing that we talk about with Vandermeeren, where like Mona's love for Hannah is the one true thing, and how I do think that there is this core of like, this is this way of keeping Chloe close. This is this way of keeping Chloe enchanted, because like Shara's feelings for her are so big. And like, this is a way of trying to sort, you know, almost take back some of the power that she feels that Chloe has over her. It also, to me, is very reminiscent of like what we talked about, how, you know, why is April so obsessed with Sterling before the show starts? Why do they have this fierce rivalry when they used to be such close friends? It's like, it's this way of keeping each other close. It's this way of like being obsessed with one another, but giving it a different label, because the label of what it actually is too scary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love this for them. I love this story.
Yes.
You were talking a little bit about the queerness of the world. And I kind of want to go back to that. I mentioned that Chloe is bisexual and that's mentioned throughout the book. So you don't like, you never like just mistake Chloe for like a lesbian or anything like that. She's out as bi. She's very proud of that. We also have non-binary representation in the Ash character. There is a small group of queer friends who I feel like in another book, the small group of queer friends is basically all you would get. There's the best friend, Georgia, who is also queer, but who is like more closeted than Chloe is because she's from this town. She's not sure how her parents are going to react, etc. They have their theater friend, Benji, who is gay, who it's implied is also like not out to like the wider world really. So it's like this small group of like kind of queer theater friends And they're sort of who Chloe like socializes with and has all her interactions with. But as the book moves along, oh my goodness, like so many characters who you encounter throughout the book turn out like at some point, I think I texted you. I was like, well, it seems like these two characters who've been spending a lot of time with are queer, but also this other character seems queer and this is very queer. And so it just feels like it's a world where anyone can be queer and almost everyone cashes that in.
Oh, I completely agree. And it really, as a result of that, it really ends up being this celebration of queer community and really flies in the face of the sort of one queer per story, one queer per friend group kind of trope that we see that we've talked about with Emily, you know. Probably one of the more significant queer developments is, and spoiler alert, turn back now if you haven't already, the Smith and Rory relationship, which I loved so much. So for context, Smith has been Shara's boyfriend. Rory has been the neighbor with the crush. And throughout like the first half of the book, there's a lot of discussion about, so Smith and Rory used to be best friends and there's a lot of hurt. And you think that the hurt is about Shara and the fact that, you know, Rory had feelings for her and Smith, you know, maybe kind of, you know, quote unquote, stole her in a way. And there's, you know, but there's like this other edge of this tension that you're like, there's something else going on here. And come to realize that, like, it's been them all along. Like, the real love story here is Smith and Rory. And Shara herself saw this. And part of this whole scheme of hers was to try to engineer their relationship, which is definitely the sort of A as life coach thing. And this is like what we talk about so often, this idea of like you cut out the middle portion of the love triangle, because clearly the two characters who are so focused on each other, maybe they're the ones who are supposed to be together all along. You know, this feels like a version of like Spanna. This feels like a version of like a canonically queer Caleb, because Rory feels very Caleb to me. This is also like, in a weird way, this also is very Stepbrol, because it's like best friends to enemies to lovers in its truest form. And then the like cherry on top of all of this is that Smith starts to explore the fact that his gender might not be totally binary, which is a really fun element of the story as well, especially for, you know, this tough jock guy. I just loved that development so much.
Oh my gosh, I did too. And what a finely threaded needle it is to have, there are these three characters. The name of the book is I Kissed Shara Wheeler. So that's what they all have in common. You know, her longtime boyfriend, the quarterback, the boy next door with the crush, and Chloe, her rival, all have to, like, that's their assignment. They have to find Shara. They have to get these notes. They have to decode them. They have to figure out what's next. They have to pursue her. So what a finely threaded needle to get these characters on this mission and to create the notes and the story that is going to make these two guys fall out of love with Shara and see that they are really meant to be together while pulling Chloe further and further and further in to her own feelings. But boy, it does it just perfectly.
Oh, it is lovely. And this is like a book that every little detail has been so finely crafted. One of the things that we learn early on in the story is that Rory kind of has this bad boy sort of, you know, that's his reputation at school. And one of the things that he did is he had flooded the science lab when they were supposed to be dissecting frogs. And that's like one of his bad boy moves. And you find out later in the book that Smith loves frogs and was devastated about the idea of having to dissect a frog. And that this was, in essence, Rory's sort of love letter to Smith, was doing this. it's just, it's details like that that are like, just give the this sweet humanity to the characters.
Yes. Yes. I completely, completely agree. And I love that. So we have a lot of different, like we have a lot of different characters who are coming at queerness from different angles, and also characters who are on a lot of different journeys in terms of their coming out. Like Georgia is out to Chloe and, you know, presumably like the other theater kids, but you know, she's not out to her parents. Like Chloe, we think, is the only kid who's like out at school. That's pretty heavily implied. And then you have like you have other characters like Rory, who kind of like comes out to Chloe. You get the sense that that might be the first time that he's kind of saying it out loud, like, what if I was into a guy or guys? And Chloe has to like, you know, kind of help him through that a little bit. You have Smith, who also like is kind of exploring gender fluidity, and he gets to like talk about that to some other characters who are further along in their journeys. It's just really, it's nice to see. Like, it's not a story where everybody is just out or everybody is not out or everybody has a big coming out moment. Mm-hmm. Everybody just kind of like, the book really meets everyone where they are. And I really, I love that about it. I love that there are some characters who are out before they get in a relationship. Other characters who kind of come out through being in relationships. It's just really, it's just really lovely the way that that exists in this world. And also, I think that it is interesting the way that, like, we can tell that homophobia exists in this town because they're in a really Christian school, and because of the way that Chloe has had to kind of, like, you know, build up her psychological armor. And she kind of goes in every day, like, sort of spoiling for a fight with the school, with the administration, and with the principal, who is Shara's father. So you kind of know that, like, this is the place. Like, there's still a lot of talk about, like, her mom being a famous lesbian who, like, went to the school back in the day. It's a town that doesn't have a lot of positive queer representation. People, when they see Chloe's moms, like, other queer people who meet Chloe's moms for the first time, are, like, gobsmacked by the fact that, like, two women can be adults and be in love and have this like happy, wonderful relationship together. And so like, we know that homophobia exists, but like, it's almost like with Georgia particularly, we don't even know how her parents are going to react. She doesn't know how her parents are going to react, but it's the specter of homophobia. It's like the idea that you don't really know how people are going to react. That is like very, very scary to a queer teen. And I feel like that's, especially like in the South, especially with everything that's going on in the world right now, I feel like that's very, very real.
Yeah. And I feel like the I was going to say the show, because I'm so used to the things we talk about being shows, but this is actually a book. I feel like this book does a really interesting job of, so much of this book is this idea that people are more than what they appear on the outset. And Chloe in particular is a pretty judgmental character and has really harsh judgments, particularly about the people at her school, about the South, about kind of like what it means to be a person from the South versus a person from, you know, what she perceives to be sort of the more cultured, you know, place like the West Coast. And one of the things that I really like is that the story challenges Chloe's beliefs around that and gives her the opportunity to meet people who are much more open-minded, both towards her and towards themselves, than she predicted. But it doesn't feel like, oh, it's all just Candyland and it's all fine. Like, there is nuance, and there are, like, the book makes it clear, like, there are people who are never going to welcome her or welcome her friends like with open arms, but there are also a lot of people who she previously judged that will be very open-minded. And another thing, you know, when you were talking about the fact that these queer teenagers get to be at various points in their journey, one of the things that I really appreciate about having so many queer teens in a book is that so often, because of the structure of media if there's a queer character, the only other queer character they're interacting with is their love interest. And so, especially if it's a coming out story, the love interest is like the person they're coming out to, the person they're processing all of their feelings about being queer with, and also the love interest. And I mean, there's nothing really wrong with that, but it gets to be, A, it ends up being a lot of emotional labor for one half of the party, but B, it just, I think it's not really what a lot of people's experience as a queer person is. I think that for many people, like, the queer community of, like, friends and family members and chosen family members, like, that is a huge part of being a young queer person figuring yourself out. And so I really love that this book has a great mixture of, like, people having romantic relationships and getting to talk with their partners and getting to talk about their partners, but also getting to talk about being queer with people who are not their partners. I really love that a lot. And in addition to, you know, you mentioned the moms, and I want to circle back to the moms in a minute, but I also want to mention a character who is not in the story very much, but I love his little arc, is their closeted drama teacher.
Yes, who, absolutely.
One of the devices of this book, if we haven't made it clear, is like you get these little notes or that various characters have written, because the book is, Chloe is our main character. We're seeing the book through Chloe's perspective, but these little notes are sort of an outsider perspective of just a little snapshot of somebody's life. And there's one with this character of this male drama teacher who is gay, where he talks about sort of wanting to, in any small way, find ways to kind of protect these young queer kids from some of the things that he had to go through. And then in a very sort of triumphant moment towards the end of the book, he sort of gets to put that into action. And it is beautiful. And it is, again, this moment of like incredible queer solidarity in a place where some of the characters weren't expecting to ever really receive that.
Well, and he does that in conjunction with the moms. And we don't know exactly how old he is, so we don't know if he went to school with the famous lesbian or if he was her teacher. Like, he might have, I like the idea that, like, she knew of him as, like, an ally back in the day, and, like, that's how they kind of get his help in the big, like, climactic scene of the book. But yeah, I really love his character as well. And that's another part of the queer represent, like, we were talking about, like, you know, so Smith and Rory are POC characters. Also, Summer is a queer POC character that we get to know as the book moves along. We also have age diversity among the characters. The moms are like of a different generation than the queer youths in the book. And then again, like the teacher, we don't know if he's older than the moms, the same age as the moms. But you also like, so you have like sort of more queer elders, as well as like the queer youth that are running around in this particular YA novel.
Yeah. And then going back to the moms for a minute, I love so much this backstory with Chloe's mom, who went to this school and was the famous lesbian and was sort of the Shara, but also the Chloe. Like, she was the girl that there were all of these stories about, you know? And there are all these, like, wild rumors about it, and Chloe is kind of the only one who knows the truth. I love the way that the book kind of explores, like, generational trauma through generations of queer people in a really interesting way. And Chloe's mom's fear about like what she might experience. I also think that the sort of mystery around the mom's past also feels very Teenage Bounty Hunters to me, with Debbie's sort of secret past and secret kind of connections. So I love that as well. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit is we've compared Chloe to both April and Spencer. But one really significant difference, I think, is that Chloe is a character who puts pressure on herself versus April, Spencer, and also Shara, who are all characters who have this sort of parental pressure pushing down on them. What do you make of sort of the significance of that?
I think that that is a really interesting point. And I think that, you know, when we talk about like April, or we talk about Shara, or we talk about Spencer, these are queer characters who, in my read, know that they're queer. So they kind of know that they're never going to be the perfect daughter that their parents want because of this thing that lives inside of them, this queerness, mm-hmm. whether it's acknowledged, whether it's not. They know they're never going to be able to, like, give their parents everything their parents want because they feel like what their parents really want is for them to not be queer. So they overcompensate by trying to, like, excel in every other thing.
Yeah.
Chloe definitely does not have that. Chloe is fine with her queerness. Her parents are obviously, like, fine and celebrating her queerness. But I feel like Chloe puts it on, she puts that mantle on herself. She's like, well, not only am I going to be the queerest student in this school, but I'm going to be the motherfucking smartest student in this school. And I'm going to be like, you know, like, I'm going to show you how much better than this place I am.
Yeah, I agree. One of the details about Chloe is that she constantly is trying to get dress coded in these really subtle ways because she can't get in major trouble because that would impact her ability to be valedictorian. But she can find sort of these little ways of rebelling. And later in the book, she talks about her reasoning for this and how it's sort of this idea of, like, if people are going to be looking at her anyway, if people are going to be scrutinizing her anyway, she wants to kind of be in control of that, which is a perfect mirror for Shara and what Shara does. It's also extremely April Stevens in terms of this idea of, like, I am going to be the most dramatic person. I'm going to waltz into the funeral and throw myself on the floor with a, you know, veil over my face. Because, like, if you're looking at that thing that I'm controlling, you're not looking at this other part of myself that I really, really, really don't want you to see.
Yeah. Yeah. That is an amazing, amazing point. So kind of talking about, like, Chloe and her feelings about being in this small town in Alabama and being at this conservative Christian school. So Shara really represents, like, she represents this town. When Chloe and her moms first arrive in a flashback, we see that, like, Shara's face was actually, like, on a billboard as they were coming into town, like a billboard advertising this Christian school. So Shara is very much of this town. Chloe is very much like, I'm over this town. This town is nothing. And as Chloe, like, kind of goes through the process of falling in love with Shara, I feel like she also kind of falls a little bit in love with Alabama and with this place that she has spent all this time and never really allowed herself to get to know because she felt like it was going to hurt her. I feel like in both the place and the girl, there's this larger narrative of, like, opening yourself up to this experience. It may let some bad stuff in, but it also, like, opens up, like, a whole new capacity for joy.
I completely agree. I think that that's such a great point. And I think that it, like, it's this book is so much about characters who are protecting themselves from their own vulnerabilities because they just, like, they know that that is the thing that has the power to hurt them. And I really like that for Chloe, part of this. And in a way, I mean, I think there's also this element of, like, kind of the generational trauma thing of, like, she knows that this is the place that hurt her mother so profoundly and that she sort of feels like almost like she has to hate it a little bit on behalf of her mom, and that there's this real healing in both of them getting to kind of craft a new relationship with this place.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also I feel like the stuff with her mom is, like, also maybe part of why Chloe wants to make this place bow down to her, you know, like,
yeah,
like there's not going to be all these whispers about the famous lesbian. Everybody is going to know Chloe's name. Everyone is going to have listened to her valedictorian speech. Everyone is like nobody at this school is going to forget Chloe Green.
Right. And they're going to know her the way she wants to be known.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned the part where Chloe runs into, or you kind of mentioned the Georgia situation. And I thought that maybe we could talk a little bit about the part of the book where Georgia has been caught making out with Summer. Georgia is, and neither Georgia nor Summer are out at this point to anyone sort of beyond the little, you know, circle of queers. And Chloe.
I mean, I would say Summer is not even out to the circle of queers. It's a surprise. It's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
Girl turns out to be Summer. Yes.
For sure. For sure. It's a surprise. And Chloe at Shara's behest, Shara comes and gets her. And it's this very funny part of the book where this has been the part where Chloe has just been like trying to get under Shara's skin. And Shara is like always everywhere that Chloe is. And Chloe is almost like just rolling her eyes at this. Like, she's like, oh my God, why are you so obsessed with me? Like, it's so embarrassing. But then it gets really real because Shara is like, Chloe, like, Georgia is in trouble.
Yeah, I love that part of the book. That's one of my favorite parts for sure. Because like you said, they've been doing this dance. It's all a game. You know, they're kind of like moving back and forth on the chessboard. And then in the moment, like, so there have been all these rumors flying around the school that like some girl got caught making out with another girl in the locker room. And like, so whispers. And then like all of this is happening. And then Shara like sees Chloe and she's like, Chloe, it was Georgia. And Chloe's like, oh my God. Like, so this is a moment when like the game is dropped. And when Shara is just like, I have critical information that you need. And Chloe is like, and Shara, I think she says like, you can make it if you run. And so Chloe like sprints, she sprints all the way across campus to Shara's dad's office. He is on the verge, like he has the phone in his hand to call Georgia's parents. Georgia like sees Chloe and gives the code word for save me, and Chloe like throws herself on the grenade and says, it was me, I was the one who was making out with a girl in the locker room. And the whole book, Chloe's motivating force has been that she wants to be the valedictorian. That is like her like prime directive, is Chloe is going to be the valedictorian. And she throws it on. She says, no, it was me. I was making out with the girl in the locker room. And the principal, because he is Shara's father, and we later learned that he has like done some shady shit to try and have Shara beat Chloe out for valedictorian. He says, well, if it was you, you're going to be suspended and you cannot be the valedictorian. And Chloe, who's been kind of a shitty friend to Georgia, like at different points throughout the book, like they're not on great terms when this is happening. Chloe, without any hesitation, is just like, I understand. I'll take the suspension. And she just does it. And I love like everything that this says about Shara, about Chloe, about Georgia, like about how this town works and the ways in which all three of the characters understand that. Oh my gosh, I cried. I cried when Chloe said she would just take the suspension. I was like,
oh, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful culmination of all of these different arcs. Especially because like Georgia has been trying to talk to Chloe this whole book and Chloe has not been listening to her. And so it is just so beautiful that like in this moment, it's like this Shara's knowingness of Chloe and Chloe's knowingness of Georgia. It's just beautiful. I love it so much. I love just again, like the nuances of all three of four, including Summer, queer girls who are all at different journeys in their relationship to their own queerness. And it's like this moment of friendship solidarity and queer solidarity. And it ends up being this really pivotal turning point for the story as well. And it goes into the part of the book that made me cry, which is this sort of alternative graduation that the school decides, or not the school, but a bunch of the students decide to plan. And I just love it so much. For whatever reason, the detail that like just got me is there's this character named Brooklyn who is, she's like, so like one of the things that Chloe would like everybody to know about her and that she makes very clear is like, yes, Chloe is very, very smart and very, you know, type A and very intense, but she can still party. Like, she's not a total tight ass. Like, she can still have fun. She can still cut loose. And Brooklyn is like...
She's like the Paris Geller.
Brooklyn is very much the Paris Geller. She is like, she's not going to be, you know, going to any parties. She's very concerned about all these things. She's like a textbook rule follower, you know. She's like the person who reminds the teacher when they have a, you know, when they have homework due kind of person. And so for a lot of the book, Brooklyn has been kind of a thorn in Chloe's side and kind of presented as a bit kind of in opposition to Chloe, in essence. And there is this part where Brooklyn finds out about this alternative graduation plan. And at first you think, oh, Brooklyn's going to try to shut it down, or she's going to call the school, or she's going to, you know, she's going to basically rat them out somehow. And Brooklyn is just furious that they were trying to plan something without her, the class president. And she swoops in and becomes the planner, becomes the alternative graduation planner. And that was the part of the book that made me cry, or the first part, I should say, because there were multiple parts that made me cry.
Yeah, there were multiple parts, especially as we got through. Like, one of the things that I was texting you as I was getting through it was like, I don't know how she's going to stick the landing on this, because it just seemed like there were so many things that needed to be resolved. There were so many things that were going through. I was like, I just don't know. I don't know how this is going to like be able to turn out in a way that's going to feel satisfying on all fronts. But oh my gosh, it really does. It really does. And yes, I also cried several times in the run up to the end, for sure.
It's so good. It's so, so good. And it's just, it's like these kids, like these sweet kids are just like, they're trying to make the world a better place. And it's gorgeous.
Well, so you start off with this kind of like the way that Smith and Rory and Chloe interact. Like, so Chloe is like the valedictorian, the smart, you know, queer student. Smith is like, you know, he seems to be sort of like the dumb jock. Like, he's just, you know, he's just known as a football player. He's a really popular guy, Letterman jacket, et cetera, et cetera. And then Rory is kind of the bad boy, the musician. You know, so they have kind of like a breakfast club thing going on where like, what are those three doing hanging out? They seem like they come from such different arenas. But then like through these guys, like, you know, Smith kind of gets to know some of Rory's like musician friends, and Chloe winds up going to like a big jock party where like her combat boot heels keep getting stuck in like the paving stones at the fancy rich guy's house and stuff. Like, so you kind of like, it starts with like a sort of traditional high school caste system, but then it winds up also like breaking free of that through the relationships that Chloe is forming with the other characters. And I think that there's really, so in the end, like when it comes to the alternative graduation, like you have Smith and some of his jock friends who are really into it. There's like a jock who was in a theater production previously, who like the theater kids were just like, he just tried out as a joke. He didn't even really mean it. And like, as you go through the story, it's like, no, he really did. He really wanted to be in a musical and he was good in it. You know, et cetera. So you get the jocks who are involved in it. You get like the weird alternative musician kids, the skateboarding kids who are like also into it, Chloe's theater friends. You just get such a wide range of people who all kind of come together in this pursuit that it just feels really special and beautiful.
Oh, I agree. And I think, you know, the trope that we're sort of used to as an audience is like, oh, the, you know, quote unquote nerdy girl, she starts hanging out with the popular kids and abandons her other friends. And then it's, oh, whoops, the popular kids are mean to her and she's lost her friends and she has to atone and that kind of thing. And this book so beautifully subverts that by having the popular kids have a lot more depth to them as well. And it's just, I love that. Like, one of the ending little reveals is like Brooklyn has this flirtation with April, not Stevens, different April, very confusing, who is like the like burnout stoner chick who's like one of Rory's friends. And it's just like, it's like, yeah, it's, there's this, just everybody can kind of, enjoy being with everybody else. It's lovely.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. I love this book. So you said you wanted to circle back to the moms. Let's go ahead and circle back to the moms. I had in my notes that the moms are basically the Ella Ashley pairing of dreams.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm thinking that Ella is mama and Ashley is mom. Like,
I mean, it's not a perfect analogy, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. Like if Ella was a better parent.
Well, yes.
Yes. Yeah. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I can totally see that. And I really liked that that they had such a just loving functional relationship.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think what I wanted to say about the moms, I feel like I've already said about the generational trauma, but I really liked those characters a lot. And the book really gives everybody a little something, you know, everybody gets to have a little something. Did you have more that you wanted to say about the moms?
Well, I would also like to say that we get the sense of the moms, like they've come back to this place because the grandmother was in failing health. So like,
yes,
you get that sense of like, you know, Chloe wants to be like a good daughter. Her mom wanted to be a good daughter. She came back to this place that she had a lot of mixed feelings about. She brought her whole family back there, you know, in order to take care of stuff. So I like sort of that element of it, the way that the roots, you know, run so deep in this town. And I also like that there is, there's a bit of a class diversity too, because her one mom is like an auto mechanic, I think.
Yeah.
And the other mom is like either an opera singer or like a costumer of an opera company. It's not totally clear, but she works in the arts.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that as well. And I think that in general, the book, like the book has a really interesting kind of angle on class and also the intersection of class and race, especially with a character like Rory. I really liked that element as well. The references are super fun in this book. And two of the most referenced pieces of art are Phantom of the Opera and A Midsummer Night's Dream. And they are both sort of the pieces of art that Chloe and Shara speak to one another through. And I love that. That also feels super PLL, right? To have like some art piece that you kind of speak to your lover through. I think one of the things that also is really fun in that dynamic is that there's sort of this element of like, who is haunting who here?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I totally agree. Also, I think it's so smart to have the points of reference be Midsummer Night's Dream, which is of course like a, you know, a play that like high school students the world over have had to read. As well as like Phantom of the Opera, which is like, you know, theater nerd for, you know, 25 years and counting. Like,
yes,
like they're timeless. Like they're timeless. Yeah. Like, touch points, which I really enjoy. Also, the queerness of Phantom. Oh, my God. I've always said that that's such a queer musical. And after I finished reading this book, I spent a day listening to the Phantom soundtrack and just thinking of it as it related to Shara and Chloe. And it was so fun. Like in the school production of Phantom, Chloe was of course playing Christine. And there's like a lot of reference to Shara sitting there in the front row and just listening to Chloe and like knowing when Chloe has messed up a line, even though yes, no one else notices. And I think that one of the moments when Chloe really remembers, like, just, you know, Shara's sitting there and you get the sense of like the light beaming down upon her golden hair and Chloe is singing think of me fondly, which is such a Shara song, because then
yeah,
is gonna disappear and want Chloe to become obsessed with her, and it's just it's so perfect and it works on so many levels, especially like with Shara coming to terms with her queerness, like the whole, you know, like let your fantasies unwind element of, yes, Phantom, you know, yeah, incredible.
Well, and one of the things that I think is great with Midsummer is like, Shara would sort of like everybody to act like this was just a game. This was just a dream. This wasn't a real thing that happened. Like, yes, she was playing around with people's lives, but like, it actually wasn't real. It actually doesn't change anything. And of course, it changes everything. You know, it's not just a dream. It's not just a joke. It's not just she can leave her little notes and then just kind of reappear one day, as maybe she had thought. I think that it's really fun and uses those references smartly, but never in a way that feels in any way pretentious. You had made a comparison to Buffy, that I wanted to talk a little bit about.
Yeah. I think that, you know, this whole book takes place in the last few weeks of high school, like the last few weeks leading up to graduation. I think that the sort of like inciting incident happens at prom, like Shara disappears from the prom. And then it takes place between the prom and graduation. And there's like a day's countdown of like, how many days has Shara been gone? How many days are left until graduation? So it kind of has that feeling of like, you know, the last days of Rome. Like these are like the last, you know, like you're, you know, you don't have to like really work too hard. All your college stuff is already done. You have to take finals, but it's like, you know, it's just like a lot of free time to kind of like mess around with your friends. So that's kind of the vibe. But also a big theme is like this impending graduation. The name of the boat that Shara is hidden away on is the graduation. And so there's this looming vibe of like, we're going to party so hard right now because we're about to like transition into this totally new and unknown like segment of our lives. Like adulthood is like impending right around the corner, and I feel like that is very much season 3 of Buffy, the final two episodes of which are graduation part 1 and part 2, when, you know, Buffy is kind of having to put like childish things away and like lead everybody into battle. And so I feel like there's a lot of that vibe that runs through like the last parts of this book, where everybody is like coming together for the graduation ceremony. And there's like a terrible principal. This one does not get eaten by a snake, but
unfortunately,
you sort of wish that he would.
Yeah, I love that comparison. And when you mentioned that, I started thinking about Chloe and Shara as Buffy and Faith, of course. And sort of this idea of like, not only do they have the kind of that tension, right, of like the competition that is, you know, that has a lot of desire wrapped up in it and the sort of longing for aspects of one another's lives and all of that. But there's also this element of like, we are maybe not supposed to exist at the same time, you know, like there can only be one of us. And for there to be two of us, one of us has to be destroyed, and because like, what is the alternative to that? Is the alternative that we love one another? Like that's too much. That's too close, you know. Which also felt very like Rory Paris to me, right? Like when Rory comes to Paris's school and it's like, get out of here! What are you doing? And she's, you know, whispering sonnets of Shakespeare into Rory's ear. Very heterosexual behavior. I really like that. I like the sort of echoes of these other dynamics. And it reminded me of actually our initial discussion when we had many moons ago, when we did our TBH miniseries, we had talked about the, you know, was that always there and just paralyzed line. And I remember that you had made a comment around that part of the reason that you loved that line was because it sort of gave credence to the idea that that same dynamic could be at play with all of these other relationships that were never allowed to become canon. And I feel like this is like another echo of that in a really beautiful way.
Oh my gosh. I agree 100,000%. Like, again, this is the evolution. Like this This is like Rory Paris. This is like Spencer Mona. This is like everything, everything just kind of coming along to the point where we can actually look at these stories and be like, why, yes, that is a queer story. And we're going to know that because these characters are queer for each other. Yeah. So, which we get to see and experience, and it's going to be great. So yeah, I feel like this is definitely like another point on that side of the scale, and like another weight on this end of the teeter totter, which I am very happy about.
Oh, I agree. And I love that it's like, you know, we have talked about the PLL kind of plausible deniability of queerness, where it feels like if there's ever an opportunity, especially as the series goes on, if there's ever an opportunity to like de-queer a character, the show will take it, you know, where it's like, well, we don't really know that Jenna and Shauna were in a relationship. And like Allison probably just like is in love with Emily. Like she's never felt this way about any other women. And like, you know, just constantly like, is the Sabrina and Emily situation even a date? Is it even a relationship? Like, what is it? And I feel like this book goes in the other direction where it's like, if there is an opportunity to make a character or a dynamic queer, this book is going to take it. And I love that. I love that it's like a queer normative universe. That still exists within our own universe and still speaks to the struggles that queer people actually have.
Yes, I completely agree. It's like, it's not a completely utopian story.
No.
Because the characters have to fight for their rights and their recognition and things like that. But it is a utopian story in the sense that like, it's showing you like a way in which the world could be more beautiful than you expect.
Yes. Yeah. I was so like, I kind of knew going in, I was like, well, obviously Chloe and Shara, like obviously that's going to be the relationship because like that feels like that's what the dynamic that's being set up as. But the Smith and Rory thing, I was like, oh, I really hope this happens. I really hope this happens. And, you know, there's that voice in the back of my head, even though this is a queer author, an author whose voice I trust, that's like, well, they're not actually going to do that. You know, like, you don't get two main queer ships on a TV show. You're not going to get two main queer ships in this book. Like, it's just not going to happen. And then when it was clear it was going there, and then a whole bunch of other characters were queer too, it was like, oh, this is good. This is really good.
Okay, but I'm gonna say something that I really love. I love that Smith and Rory are the ship that we also get. I love that they are like POC men who are like exploring this attraction to each other. I love that Smith, the jock, is also like exploring some gender fluidity. Love everything about that. And I love, of course, that Chloe and Shara wind up together. But I'm also going to say that one of the things that I thought was amazing about this book were that the OTPs do not feel at any point like, oh, it's set in stone that this is what's going to happen. Even though yes. The book is called I Kissed Shara Wheeler, like I was probably about halfway through when I was texting you and I was like, well, Smith and Rory both seem very gay, but should Smith be with Ace? I think maybe that's the relationship he should be in. And then I was also talking about, like, so is it going to be Chloe and Shara? I mean, it seems like it might be, but what if Shara is trying to get her to realize her feelings for Georgia? Like,
yeah,
I felt like there were multiple pathways that the story could go, and I would still be, like, there for it. And I feel like that is also like a real strength of the writing. And it speaks to how many of the characters are like very fully realized and very developed characters to the point that like you could see just multiple different pathways for the relationships to evolve.
Well, I totally agree. It's also a much more realistic look at teenage relationships than a show like PLL, because like teenagers do date their friends and they do like, you know, hook up with multiple people. And that's also a very queer experience, right? Mm-hmm, and so that feels so much realer and more interesting than like the PLL thing of like, well, you meet your soulmate at 16 and that's PLL, you know?
Yes, exactly. I will say, although I was like, I don't know, these ships could be like anything. I'm not sure. I did solve the mystery very early. I did have it pegged that Shara was going to be on the boat. So I am patting myself on the back.
You did. You mentioned the boat, which also another PLL thing, like Wilden's boat, Beach Hottie, yeah. Like that's all very PLL. Shara also feels, there is also to me a kind of a CC Melissa thing with Shara and Chloe that I think is very fun as well.
I agree. Well, speaking of characters that Shara reminds us of, and since we were just talking about Paris Geller, at the end of the book, one of the things that Shara does upon her return is that she cuts her hair in a really dramatic way. Like, she cuts her hair, like, it's short, it's kind of asymmetrical, she dyes it pink. Hi, Aria. but I was imagining, like, when I was visualizing what that haircut looked like, I was remembering Paris Geller in the revival. Her hair in the revival being one of the only good things about the revival period. But I was imagining that, like, that haircut was kind of how Shara's looked, but also pink.
Yeah, I love that too. That actually feels very Aria, like you said, or just feels very, like, it feels so specific to this character and so teenagery of, like, I'm not just going to have, it's also very Hannah bad girl phase, right? It's like, I'm not just going to, like, quietly have my bad girl phase. I am going to, like, give myself a haircut and dramatically dye my hair. And, like, this shall be my bad girl phase. I that is such a great character note.
Yes. Absolutely love it. I also, when we talk about the other characters feeling really developed, I just really want to shout out the way that the book lets characters go on personal journeys, even though so much of the book is told from Chloe's perspective. You also have, like, these burn pile notes that you're getting. Also have, like, overheard conversations and things. So I love that Smith is talking to Summer at one point, and Chloe kind of overhears them, and he's talking about when they did, you know, basically, like, this school's version of, like, the egg parent project, which for them was, like, flower sacks, and he and Summer had to, like, be in charge of it, and then something happened, they had disaster befall their flower sack, and so they had to, like, go and get, like, some substitute flower and, like, rig it up, and he says to Summer, sometimes that's how I feel. I feel like I'm a bag of flour that somehow got switched. And I feel like that's, like, there's so much self-reflection and insight there, especially for a character who is, like, kind of coming to realize his own queerness, who is kind of having to assess what Shara's absence means, what their relationship actually was or meant to him, what his relationship to Rory is, what his relationship to his gender is. And it's just, it's so rare, I feel, that you get to have a supporting character who gets to have that kind of narrative.
Oh, I completely agree. I loved the use of Smith sort of has this essay that he's writing in the burn notes about kind of, what, I forget actually what the prompt is. It's like, when did you feel the most yourself?
Yes.
Or something like that. And the evolution of that throughout the book is so beautiful.
Oh my gosh. It really, really is. And then he also has a moment. One thing I will say about this book is that they have a character called Ash, who is non-binary, and they have a character called Ace, who's running around with the jocks, but who also seems very queer. And I wish that they would have diversified those names a little bit.
I agree. I agree. I have the same note.
I feel like two three-letter A running around is a little much. Of course, that could happen in a regular high school. Many people have three-letter A names, but I felt like you can control that in the world. Maybe you should. However, Ash is, like, this non-binary character, and there's, like, this big theater party, and Ash is, like, doing makeup on people, and Smith kind of, like, sort of tentatively wants some makeup, and you hear this conversation that the two of them have, and Smith is kind of like, I don't know, explain to me about being non-binary. It's like, I don't have a choice. I, like, have to be a dude because, like, dudes are the ones who play football and stuff. They're, like, men are the ones who play football. And Ash just kind of very gently says, like, well, if being a man feels like it's, like, a burdensome obligation to you, maybe interrogate that a little. And it's, like, again, the book is, like, meeting the characters where they are. Like, Ash isn't like, well, of course, this means, like, let me get out some flowcharts. They're just, like, very gently, like, maybe you should think about that. And I love that.
I love that, too. I really, really love that, too. I agree.
Similarly, the detail, like, there's a diamond necklace that Shara, it was, like, a cross, and Shara threw it away And Chloe stole it out of a trash can back in a long time ago flashback. And later, Chloe is talking to Shara about that. And Shara says, I didn't throw it away because it didn't mean anything. I threw it away because it meant too much. And it really like speaks to Shara and to her character of like, if something is becoming too important, she wants to distance herself from it. She wants to run away. It's like how she protects herself. And again, I just think that that's like such depth to give to a character who is not the protagonist. It's so rare and it's so, so good. It makes the book so much better. It makes the world feel so much more lived in and all the characters so much more three-dimensional.
Yeah, I agree. And it gives like that also feels super PLL, right? To kind of have this like talisman of that like has all this meaning imbued into it.
Oh my God, like the little friendship bracelets that everyone is constantly wearing. Yeah, a piece of jewelry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we could do a whole episode just on PLL pieces of jewelry. We really could. I think we've even had that discussion before. But I really like that. I really like that, too. And it again goes to this like fear of your own vulnerability. That's a really powerful thread.
Yeah. I love so much about this book. Should we talk about the big ending? Should we talk about
the ending?
So Chloe is like booted from being valedictorian. People are mad about it. They kind of are feeling like you can't do that. It's not right, especially because Chloe has been suspended allegedly for kissing a girl in the bathrooms. I love that the principal does not inquire into who she was kissing, which like, you know, if it was Georgia, like that definitely would have been like a line of inquisition, but that fucker does not inquire about it because it's Chloe. And so it's like way too close. Like the chances are way too good that it's going to be his own daughter. So he's just like, oh, it was you? I see. You're out. Like, no follow-ups.
Yes.
No notes.
Yes, exactly.
But so they're going to stage this alternative graduation that is going to happen across the street from the school. They're trying to like get press attention to basically like to pressure the school board to perhaps like act to remove the principal or just to, you know, draw attention to how archaic some of their rules are. And one of the things that a lot of the people are upset about is that it was Georgia and Summer who were kissing in the locker room, which is later revealed. And Summer has like, she could have gotten kicked out too. And she's like never broken a rule in her life. Like the only thing she did was kiss Georgia in the locker room. So a lot of like her friends and her allies are like really upset about that. Summer's parents have a car dealership, I think, that's like across the street from the school. And so that's where this ceremony is going to take place. All the different kids are coming together. They're all going to be part of it. And then while this is all happening at school, all of these emails and documents suddenly appear. They're like taped to everyone's lockers. They're like thrown around the floor. All of this evidence is laying around about Shara's dad, who's the principal, having taken bribes to get kids better ACT scores, to change their grades in classes, to boost them up in the class rankings, to help them get into colleges, things like that. To fake them being on athletic teams, like per every college admissions scandal.
Yeah.
So all of this malfeasance that he has been part of. So this is like scattered all around the school. There's hope that that the board might take some action on that. It turns out that Shara is the one who Shara and Rory have like busted open the case of her dad's malfeasance and put it out there to the world. That is later going to be exposed as part of the alternative graduation, which is going to eventually like dethrone Mr. Wheeler as the principal of the school. Chloe gets the girl. She and Shara are, you know, an item. And as they are having this alternative graduation ceremony, the drama teacher and the moms have stolen all of their diplomas from the school so that they can get their actual diplomas as they are walking across the stage at alternative graduation. And it is a moment.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. They get their diplomas. And it's interesting because, like, Shara kind of disappears from the story for a section there. Mm-hmm. As she has, you know, because Chloe has, like, more pressing matters to deal with. But they do end up eventually, you know, reuniting and admit, kind of dropping the game, finally dropping the game and being real with one another.
Well, I like the fact that Chloe just has to keep finding her. Like, she has to find, like 1 million letters. Then she has to find her on the boat. Then she has to, like, kind of find her, like, in her mental space of, like, ha ha, she's in love with me.
Yes.
Then she has to kind of find the real Shara, who's like, it's Georgia, run. And then she finds her, like, by climbing the ladder up to her window and, like, having her run down Romeo and Juliet style out to Chloe's car.
I love the use of ladders in this book. Like, it's so, like, teenagery. It's so kind of romance-y, you know? It's so, like foolhardy, you know? It's like this thing that only a teen would think is a good idea, is to just be, like, constantly climbing up ladders that people don't know, you know, into windows where people may or may not be there, you know? And yeah, it's really interesting because, like, Shara kind of obviously is in essence kind of rejecting the sort of party line of her family, and yet there's questions about sort of what does this mean for Shara moving forward.
Well, yeah, because like, Shara was gone, her family was not calling the police, her family was not allowing there to be gossip about her. They were, like, giving it out that she was visiting a sick relative, like, elsewhere, you know, she was doing something, you know, appropriately, like, Southern and, you know, full of decorum, etc.
Yeah.
So that was really the narrative that they were selling. And when Shara comes back, she is, like, doing everything possible to make that narrative just impossible to accept.
Yes. I love that. I love that so much. And I love, like, that she's kind of learned a little bit about rebellion from Chloe, in a sense, which is a really neat kind of neat turnaround. And, oh my God, I just have to mention one of my favorite moments, kind of towards the end of the book ish, is that Shara is, after she's been found on the graduation and come back, she's going to leave a note for Chloe, and at Chloe's window, and Chloe finds her and, like, chases her out the window and is like, no, you don't get to do this. You have to have a normal conversation with me, like a normal person. You don't just get to keep running around leaving notes for people. And Shara is like, just take the note, just take the note, and tries to shove the note in Chloe's mouth. And Chloe is like, no, I reject this note. Like, you may not feed this note to me. Like, you have to talk to me. You just have to talk to me like a normal person. And, like, it's a hilariously written scene. But I also love it, like, especially, you know, obviously we talk so much about the lack of communication on PLL. And it's kind of that way where you sometimes wish that one of the liars, particularly Emily, would just, like, take Allison by the shoulders and be like, no, you can't just keep talking to me in, like, cryptic old, you know, blues lyrics and, like, you know, half-formed, like, fortune cookie phrases. Like, you have to just talk to me like a normal person and, like, tell me what's going on. And so it's a deeply satisfying moment when Chloe is like, fuck this. I reject this whole way of communicating with you.
Well, my favorite part of that scene, which that was a moment where you could almost cry from laughing because it is really, really funny. But my favorite part of that is Chloe is like, no, you have to talk to me like a normal person. And I'm going to make you do that by, like, rolling around in the grass with you and trying to, like, literally, like, pin you down in order to speak, which is, again, not really how normal people communicate.
No.
Like, go off, sis. Like,
it's that also feels very Paris Geller.
That feels very Spencer going across the table at Mona at the academic decathlon, I say.
It does. Yes. Also, like, the use of, like, manhandling or woman handling one another at various points also feels very April and Sterling to me.
There's also a point that I said was very PLL, which is that, like, in a flashback, Shara is kind of running a con about, like, which of them does or does not understand a particular calculus problem in order to get them to study together. And it's ambiguous. Like, was she trying to just get close to Chloe? Did she have some, you know, deviousness up her trick? What was going on? And Chloe discovers that Shara actually knows how to do the math because she like grabs her wrist and feels her pulse. And it's like, that's actually a Jenna trick. Like, we learn about how Jenna could do that to people when Spencer visits the school for the blind in Philadelphia and learns it from Jenna's friend there. So I was like, oh, like the air ducts, another like, could be PLL, could be this book. It's here in both of them.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I love it so much. But I'm sorry, I derailed the ending discussion because I just had to talk about that scene, which was so fun.
Oh,
but what did you make of the burn pile? The whole idea of the burn pile.
Oh, I really liked it. You keep getting like these snippets of the burn pile throughout the
book. Yeah.
And it's like, you don't really know, like, because it's a really conservative town. So it's like, is this going to be like a burning of all the witch material? Like, what is this going to be like? But it's actually like a big end of high school party where they burn, you know, old papers, old tests, stuff that they just don't need anymore. And I love that. I love the idea of the burn pile as like, you know, you toss in what no longer serves you.
Exactly.
And I think that that's so great.
And I love that there's this question between Chloe and Shara of like, do we burn the notes? Do we burn all of the notes? And that they realize like the game is over and that like it's that, you know, now they're just real with each other. Now they know that they're into one another and they can burn the notes. And that feels like, you know, it reminds me of the scene that we'll get to in season 7 where Arya is basically like, can we just stop all of this? Can we just stop this cycle? And it's sort of like, you know, it's like Mona wanting to end the game, or it's like, you know, it's like all these moments when it's like the liars try to kind of step off the hamster wheel and just live a normal life and, you know, to varying results, obviously. But yeah, I like that moment a lot.
Yeah, it's so great. I think that there is so much, like, There's so much PLL in here. There's so much Teenage Bounty Hunters in here. But like you said, it is it's its own story and it stands on its own strengths and it's so great. The only thing that I will say about it is that I wanted there to be more. Like, I really wanted there to be like an epilogue where like they're coming back after they've graduated college, or we get to see them like a year in the future. Like that's like almost my only criticism of the book is that I wish I wish we had gotten a glimpse of the future for these characters.
I agree. I think especially because they're so young and they still feel, you know, they all just still feel so vulnerable. And it's like, I want to protect them. I want to wrap my arms around them. And I think like getting to see a glimpse of them a little bit more solidly in adulthood would have maybe provided some of that reassurance to the reader. I also understand the choice to not do that. You know, I understand that this is like a story about teenagers and about kind of the ending of childhood in a lot of ways. And like, it's like now the next adventure can begin. But I wanted that too. I also just like, I wanted more time of getting to experience all of the couples being couples. You know, I wanted more time with Chloe and Shara as a couple. I wanted more time with Smith and Rory as a couple, and all of them getting to be friends as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'm also going to throw out another comparison here, which is kind of Chloe and Shara as Elizabeth and Darcy. From Pride and Prejudice, because we have like the first impressions of like, oh no, we completely hate each other, which, you know, it's sort of done away with over the time. And you also have like when they're playing the game together, I feel like it's very much like the scene where Elizabeth and Darcy are dancing, but they are like sparring. Like, Elizabeth is going out of her way to talk about how much she really disdain, like she's trying to like upset him and kind of like pierce his smooth exterior. And you they're doing that, like especially in in the movies, I feel like I love it when they're doing that scene because they dance together so well. They're doing this really complicated dance while they're also like kind of pantomiming their dislike of one another. And then of course, at the end, it comes down to these notes that then they're going to burn, just like at the end of Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Darcy wishes that Elizabeth would destroy the letter that he sent, which is like the first step in her eventually kind of falling in love with him. So I feel like there's a lot of Elizabeth and Darcy also in this particular queer love story.
Yeah. Oh, I can absolutely see that. I feel like this is so much, it has so many of the tropes that we love in a relationship, but it's also, it also feels really original. It doesn't just feel like a collection of tropes.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of that is to do with the queerness. Like, how many times have we wanted like a really queer version of any story you can think of that we love? And now yeah. I feel like, hello, here it is.
Here it is. Hello. Welcome. Yes, I completely agree. I really hope that this is a book that teens will read, because I feel like it's a book that, I mean, it's definitely a YA book that anybody of any age can enjoy, but I really hope that it's a book that teens enjoy too.
Yeah, I feel like the world is a complete trash fire right now. So yeah. This was a great time for this book that is like an easy read. It's so enjoyable. It's a page turner.
Absolutely.
It leaves you feeling more hopeful than when you started. It's escapist. It just draws funny. You in. Yeah, it's just a great, great book. Particularly, I think, for this moment in time.
This book literally made me both laugh out loud and like fully cry. So that it brings it all. Do you have anything more you want to talk about with I Kissed Shara Wheeler?
Oh my gosh. I cannot wait for her next book, because now I've read, in between when I finished this book and when we were doing this podcast, I finished Red, White, and Royal Blue, and I loved that one as well. So, five stars.
Do you think that I Kissed Shara Wheeler could be made into a movie or a series?
Oh my goodness. Take my money. Yes.
I'd love it. I would love it. Yeah. I think it'd be really fun.
Oh my gosh. We know we're podcasting that if that happens.
How fun would it be if they got like, I don't know if she's the right age. She's probably a little too young. I guess it would depend on when they made it. But if they got like Troyan to be one of the moms or something.
I was just going to say that if the moms were like, yeah. Or if they, you know, depending on how they do it, if like Neve Campbell was one of the moms, I would be here for that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be here for that as well. Me too. Okay. Well, yes, please read this book if you haven't already. If you have read it, we'd love to hear from you. Like, what were things that you loved about it? Also, like, I always love recommendations of queer books. So listeners out there, if you've read any queer books that you really loved, and you want to share with us, please do. We can also, you know, shout them out on the podcast next time. This was a really fun ride.
I'll tell you about the queer book that I read. So I read this one. I read, Red, White, and Royal Blue. In between, I read Edge of Glory, which is it's a queer book about a snowboarder who falls in love with a downhill skier.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, that was a fun one as well. So here we've never done a book podcast before, but here we will throw all of these recommendations out at you. Venus, tell us about another queer book that you've read recently.
Okay. I super, super, super different vibe. But I read a book a couple months ago called All of You, Every Single One, which is a book about this kind of group of queer people before, during, and after World War II living in Austria. And it's a heavy book. It's definitely a heavier book, but it is also really just beautiful and really a lot about like queer solidarity and found family and queer resilience. And spoiler alert, like it's not a book about a bunch of dead queer people. So like, I'll just put that disclaimer out. Like there is death, but I came away from the book feeling hopeful more than like distraught. So, that is one that I would highly recommend. And it's a book that I feel like nobody has heard about it. And I thought it was great. So all excellent. Of you, every single one.
Great.
Yeah. So I think next week we're finally, although, you know, who knows, maybe something will come up between now and then. No, we're going to get back into CLL. We really are. We promise. Okay.
Here's the thing. When we get back into PLL, it is season 7. And one of the first things we're going to have to talk about is Hannah being kidnapped. And if you were like, Joanna, do you want to do an episode next week about your favorite kind of paper napkin? Or do you want to talk about Hannah being kidnapped? I would be like, oh man, I really don't want to talk about Hannah being kidnapped. But we must, you know, the only way out is through. We have to do it. So...
you know what? Where there's a way in, there's a way out. That's what I have to say to you.
Very true. Very true.
So, but also if you like, you know, the Everybody A book club, if you'd like us to talk about more books, like let us know, you know, there are not endless episodes of PLL. So, we do, you know, want to think about sort of what the future of this podcast will look like. So if you like book discussions, let us know. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can also check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. You can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. Yeah. So next week, TikTok bitches, here we come. Yay!
Get excited. All right. Till then, take care, everybody. We'll be right back.